Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. About 36 companies in Vermont have a model that allows employees to take an ownership stake. There are several different ways to go about it, but they all have made the decision that employees should share some of the risk and some of the reward of the business venture. Some well-known local companies have gone this route: King Arthur Flour, Gardner's Supply, and earlier this year, Switchback Brewing changed its ownership structure to an employee-owned plan. A few weeks ago, Governor Scott proclaimed October Employee Ownership Month and put the state stamp of approval on the concept, saying that employee-owned companies increase stability and productivity. But there's got to be a downside, too, right? Today on the show, we're going to explore the concept, and joining me is Don Jamieson, Executive Director of the Vermont Employee Ownership Center. Don, nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jay.
It seems derivative, but is it worth asking what employee ownership actually means?
No, it's actually a really good question, of course. Employee ownership, there are two predominant forms of it. One is the employee stock ownership plan, and all the companies that you mentioned have one of those, an ESOP for short. And that's a indirect form of ownership where there's a trust that's created which holds stock for the benefit of employees who actually get the cash value only when they leave. So it's really kind of an indirect form of employee ownership. More direct, there are actually roughly 15 worker cooperatives in this state, so making the total more like 50 employee-owned companies. And those companies have membership. So after an employee has been employed for a couple of years, they become eligible and then become direct owners of the company.
So. Even within an ESOP, the employee stock ownership plan, there are companies where there's a strong ownership culture and companies where you basically just wait till you leave and then you're going to collect whatever you get to collect, right? I mean, there's still, even within that structure, a lot of ways to sort of decide how you want your company to run.
Yeah. So the degree of participation is optional, I guess you could say, right? with worker co-ops, really not, because there the employees are directly running the company, so they need to understand the financials thoroughly and understand the governance. It's not really necessary in an ESOP company, but those companies that get the reputation as employee-owned and have this great culture tend to be very participatory. So the ones that you named, actually, Gardner Supply Company and King Arthur Flour and PC Construction, are increasingly participatory companies.
Well, let's talk to another company that just got into this game. I mentioned Switchback Brewing Company in Burlington went to an ESOP earlier this year, and Abby Malcolm is marketing manager for Switchback, and she's on the line with us now. Hi, Abby. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'd love to know how you feel like it's going a few months in here at Switchback.
It's going great. There are a lot of aspects of an ESOP that they encourage employees to do, and we already were doing a lot of them, but it's just elevated what we were doing already, and you can just tell everyone's heart is so much more into what we're doing, and every little decision everyone's making is for the future of the company.
How can you tell? When you say you can tell, when you say you can tell and it sort of feels different, how do you know that people are feeling that sense of ownership?
There are a few things. One, we have an ESOP committee, and so that is made up of employees of all different departments, from production, the tap room, the office. And they kind of come together and kind of see what we can do better. And also when it comes to decision making, you can really tell that Bill and Jeff, who were the owners before, have taken sort of a step back and looking to us to say, you know, this is your company and this decision is now yours and not just ours. And so you can tell the responsibility and the decision making is a lot more across the board. Not any decision is really made without the entire company really being involved and approving it.
Don, is there a right or a wrong way to do that kind of ESOP? I mean, if there is that kind where there's sort of less of a culture of ownership and more of a culture of waiting and taking your stock out, you know, when you leave, versus what Abby's talking about, do you see a successful model that follows one structure or another?
Well, you know, as I say, you can do it either way. So there certainly are great models for participation, and there are consultants who will come and help you become more participatory. The function of a lot of the conferences that people go to is really to build that team sense in a company. So there is a lot of, you know, you could say propaganda or community around that kind of employee-owned company. The other ones where they remain pretty much as they've always been, I mean, you know, they can do whatever they want. And, you know, often it works out very well for the employees anyway, because when they retire, they get on average roughly 2.5 times the retirement savings that people in non-ESOP companies have. So there's a benefit even there.
So what would be a reason that a company would want to do that kind, where it's really not a participatory culture, but there is that benefit at the end and that added retirement security maybe?
Well, I mean, there's not really a benefit for remaining super traditional, except, you know, it makes you feel that it's the way we've always done things and it's continuing to be that way. So maximum continuity, I guess you could say, is a reason for doing it that way. But if, you know, if the company leaders are interested in getting that performance plus that can happen with employee ownership, that really only comes with participation. So we always say it's really the combination of those two that makes a company a high-performance employee-owned company.
Abby, why did Switchback want to go this way? I know Bill Cherry, you know, earlier this year was saying, hey, you're all going to be partners in ownership. Isn't this a wonderful thing? But why? Why is this a good fit for Switchback?
It was a really good fit because I know Bill trying to figure out his retirement and what the transition would be once he was done. He jokes around that he essentially announced his retirement 15 years earlier and said, this is the plan for what's going to happen. You know, it's something that he put his heart and soul into, and he didn't want to just sell it off to a larger company, like a larger beer company, which a lot of local breweries and regional breweries around the country are actually ended up doing. And Anheuser InBev is picking them up, and he just didn't want to see that happen. So this was the best fit because it keeps it locally owned. It keeps it in Vermont. Obviously, he put his trust into the employees and thought that the company was running at a really good pace, and where everything was at, that he felt like it was a good time to then transition over to us. So it just all seemed to fit in that sense. So, you know, just make sure that everything that we built stays here in Vermont and locally, and our jobs are secure, and, you know, we're just not going to be sold out to some big company and, you know, go from there.
Abby, can you detail exactly how it works? How long do you have to be working before you can become part of the team that owns Switchback, and exactly how the investment stakes work?
We're still learning. It's quite a complicated process, but in the end, you're vested by the number of years you've worked. And so if you choose to leave the company after 2 years, you get 20% of what you've earned from your ownership, like stock ownership. So that basically is based on compensation, but also how long you've worked there. So you wouldn't be able to walk away with 100% of what you've vested until about 10 years. Also, in order for us as employees to own the company, there had to be a loan that was taken out. So that loan is also being paid off by the company's profits. So that'll take about 15 years. But yeah, to be really in it, you have to be vested for working for a year. 2 years. And then to get the full benefits of it, 10 years.
Was there anything that felt like more of a wobble than maybe you all expected in doing this, or a challenge that is more difficult to overcome?
Not necessarily. I think just the education side of it is it's really confusing. Most of us had never even dreamed that this was an option. So we've all had to start from the beginning to learn how it works. And I think there's new questions that arrive every day. So I think that's only really been the wobble. Other than that, it's been going great. And we all feel really good. We think the community feels really good about it. I'm pretty sure Bill is pretty happy with the decision. You know, the wobble will be, hopefully will never come, because we'll do a good enough job being really invested in the company, and that we'll be able to continue it for another 15 years at least.
Abby, before I let you go, is there anything that you see Switchback being able to do, or being able to do maybe because of that feeling of investment, that you think might not otherwise have happened if Bill Cherry hadn't taken this step?
I think there's just a little bit more input from everyone that works there on all different things when it comes to different beers being developed, where, you know, how much expansion we want to do, you know, and where we want to take the company. That really would have been completely pretty much one vision along the way. And now it's a group vision, and I think that's really positive, because everyone has a different idea and of good ideas of, like, where we should take the company. And, you know, how much growth we should do, how fast we should do it. And I just think it's better when that decision's being made by a group of individuals all with different thoughts on it. And there's not many of us. There's less than 30 of us. So it's still a pretty good, tight-knit group. And I just think more positive outcomes will come out of that when you have a lot of different views.
Don's here. I think he might have something he wants to say to you, Abby.
Yeah, Abby, I just want to thank you for agreeing to host the Employee Ownership Month celebration tomorrow night at Switchback. Actually, anybody who wants to come on down and celebrate Employee Ownership Month, come to Switchback tomorrow. I think it's 5:30 we begin, and the governor is going to come and say a few words at 6 or 6:15. And actually tonight also at Harpoon Brewery in Windsor, there's going to be one of these, also in an employee-owned company.
Abby Malcolm is marketing manager for Switchback Brewing Company in Burlington. I suppose and makes sense to host an event in the evening. Abby, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're still talking with Don Jamieson, executive director of the Vermont Employee Ownership Center, and getting questions from you all as well. You can post yours on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 800-639-2211. Abby Malcolm mentioned that Switchback is about 30 employees. Don, is there a right size, or at least maybe a traditional size, where this seems to work better for companies to be employee-owned or cooperative? I mean, the ESOP or co-op model?
Right, okay. The rule of thumb is roughly 25 employees is a minimum size for an ESOP, and that's because of the expense. They're pretty expensive to set up. When you get beyond that, you're going to save enough in taxes that that offsets those costs. The initial setup costs are quite high, and there are annual maintenance costs because you have to have an annual valuation and you have plan administration, et cetera. For a cooperative can really be any size, but we find them in smaller companies in this country, you know, mostly smaller companies. I think the average size is between 5 and 10. But there are many larger cooperatives in Europe especially, and there are some in this country also, like Equal Exchange, which is a fair trade coffee and chocolate and bananas company that a lot of people know. That's about 150 members now at this point. So it's, you know, it's pretty big. Co-ops can work great at scale, you know, but they have to evolve into usually some kind of hierarchy internally. They're not so flat. And that was kind of an interesting thing about what Abby was saying, is she was describing a pretty flat organization. Not that all decision-making is made together, but that everybody's kind of signing off on the big decisions, like strategic decisions, really. That's hard to do when you get to be a big company. So what a lot of the larger companies evolve is a committee. You know, there are different committees for different kinds of issues, so that employees feel that buy-in and engagement, but it might not be about everything. Gardner Supply Company actually does involve employees in some of the strategic planning stuff, and that's very interesting. They have town meetings, they call them, and, you know, really solicit people's thoughts on possible strategic new directions.
I remember the news last year when Chobani, the yogurt company, not a Vermont company, but in New York, went to an ESOP, and it was this big, momentous announcement by the company founder. And I think they have about 2,000 employees there who got, at least most of them anyway, got an ownership stake and stock in the company. And it was this huge thing. So it sounds like even very large companies, very sort of multinational companies, are sometimes going this route. Do you see more companies deciding to do this?
Yeah, I think right now there is definitely an uptick. Historically, the ESOP was invented, you could say, in 1956, and they grew very slowly until tax incentives were put in the mid-70s. At that point, they grew pretty quickly, but then sort of plateaued. So now we have roughly 7,000 ESOPs in the country, with about 13 million participants. So some of those companies are pretty big. And you know, like a huge supermarket chain in California, Publix Market, is actually the largest.
Doesn't Walmart have an ownership stake too?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have an ESOP, but yes, there is some stock ownership for employees. And they're Procter & Gamble, for example. There's some big public companies that have they're not majority owned, but they maybe have a sliver of stock that's owned by employees. So
probably not a flat company either, where all decisions are made by all employees.
No. Yeah. So flatness, you know, we think the worker cooperative, I'd like to talk about a little bit, because even though there are fewer of them in this state, we have a disproportionately large number compared to the rest of the country, which maybe goes with the, you know, Vermont identity, perhaps. Some of them are pretty small and flat and slow growing. Diggers Mirth Farm, for instance, in Burlington, Tamarack Media. These are, you know, four, five, six people. They're not really planning to get a lot bigger. They're really running sort of as a partnership, very quite, you know, collectivish, equal governance. Some of the larger ones, like Red House Building, which is now 24/5, PT360, which I'm you know, hoping that we can get to talk to somebody from there, is about also in the mid-20s. So they tend to evolve a management structure where there's definite delegation of authority to people to make decisions day to day. But everybody is quite engaged on the governance level, at least. So I think, you know, it's a proven structure, and it's coming back. So you asked about growth. There's definitely a lot of interest in ESOPs right now, partly because the economy is good for selling owners. So they're looking at this, you know, they're thinking about, this looks pretty good at this point. And in co-ops, there's definitely a resurgence of interest in cooperatives now also, partly because of general interest in employee ownership, but also because there's a real strong effort among developers to try to perfect the art of converting an established business into a cooperative. That's kind of a new thing now.
We're talking about how companies choose to engage their employees in an ownership stake in the business. We got a note from Nate in Burlington who says, I'm co-owner of a small business and I have a couple of questions. I worked for a consulting firm in Washington, D.C. that transitioned to an ESOP while I was there, and it was a really good experience. We've started to think about transitioning to employee ownership here someday as well. What size does employee ownership become viable or sensible? We currently have two employees. And we've also thought about transitioning to a B Corp. Can a company be both employee-owned and maintain B Corp status at the same time? And just before you answer, B Corp is another designation that allows a company not to think about just profit as its main reason for being. So, you know, it has a stock plan, but it allows a sense of responsibility or sustainability or, you know, other things to come into play there.
Yeah. So, Nate, minimum size, as I mentioned, for an ESOP is around 25, sometimes a little bit smaller depending on things like profitability. So two people, you might think about a cooperative, and I'd be happy to talk to you about that, how that might work in your case. Or you might plan for an ESOP somewhere down the road if you're expecting to grow. About B Corps, that's kind of interesting and complicated and confusing. B Corp is actually a certification. There's an organization that will certify you as a B Corp. it doesn't necessarily have any legal status. In Vermont, there's the benefit corporation, which is a legal designation, which does give that protection under state law for boards of directors to take into consideration things other than just financial criteria. So that's, yes, you can definitely be employee-owned and a benefit corporation and a B Corp.
So you could go all three.
Yeah, you could. And King Arthur Flower has, just for one example.
I thought so. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So David is calling in from Plainfield. Hi, David. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for talking to me, Jane.
Yeah. Tell us about your experience.
So I work for a small company in Montpelier. We've been around for 20 years or so, but we're called CADCUT. We cut industrial fabrics, nothing too exciting. But we were purchased by an outside company. Our owner decided to sell 5 years ago, and we were purchased by an outside company called Webb Industries, which is based in Massachusetts, but also has facilities in Indiana, Atlanta, and now in Germany. But they were a very, very embedded ESOP with a very big commitment to the ESOP culture. And so we really got dropped into the whole idea of being a part of an ESOP right into the deep end of the pool, as I say. And it's really been a fascinating experience over the last few years.
A good one for you, David?
For me personally, yes. And I think for most of the people that are there, there were employees that didn't buy in. They thought, oh, we're employee owners now. We're going to run the company. And as was mentioned earlier, that's not always the case. And especially now, we're part of a larger company, so things take part on a much bigger scale. But as far as what we do at our place, for example, now I went to work, did my job. Now I'm the safety guy. I run the safety committee. We have a wellness committee. We have the employee committee. So there's a lot more day-to-day involvement on things that go on and around with what we do on a daily basis. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad to hear your experience. Thank you for calling in, David. I appreciate that. We got a note from Neely who says, I'm a candidate for ownership of a worker-owned cooperative called AORTA, Anti-Oppression Resource and Training Alliance. As AORTA gains financial stability, I've led the process of redesigning our pay scale and rolling out new benefits like health, dental, and retirement. Giving employees democratic control and a share of the profits is an incredible way to ensure that workers are invested in the business's success. And for me personally, practicing democracy in my workplace has prompted me to engage more in local and state government, like attending public forums or calling my legislators when I'm concerned about something.
So Neely just said the D word, which is democracy.
And your hands went up.
Well, no, I just want to make the point that employee ownership does not necessarily mean democracy.
Right, right.
In a worker cooperative, yes, it does, as Neely's experience. But in an ESOP company, it doesn't necessarily. If the company's leaders have invited participation, as Webb Industries does and CADCUT experience, they'll be involved in committees and they're going to have a lot more input and they're going to be asked to think about their job and the performance of the company and all that sort of stuff. But it ain't democratic, but a worker co-op is. So.
Speaking of worker co-ops, let's talk to Mary Steiger, who's the president and a trained physical therapist at PT360. Hi, Mary. What's your structure?
Hi. Yes, we are a cooperative which was formed from the ground up. We were 12 physical therapists who decided that we wanted to do business a little different. We wanted to share in the rewards and share in the risks and also run our own business. And in 2010, we formed a cooperative. We are now 12. We started as 12 owners. We're now 17 owners. We have 32 people in all, and we just transitioned 4 people in the last year to ownership.
So it's going well then, Mary? You think this is the right approach, at least for your business?
Well, I do, because our PT360 mission statement is 360 degrees of care, and we truly believe that from the moment that you walk into any of our facilities, that you will get that 360 degrees of care, because our front desk people are owners, our athletic trainers are owners, our physical therapists are owners, our billing administrator is an owner. So every step along the way, you are interacting with an owner.
Mary, thank you for sharing your experience and the experience of PT360. I really appreciate that. Let's go to another call here from Nicole in Burlington. Hi, Nicole.
Hello?
Hi, do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask, I was very interested in the physical therapist and wondering if there's a role for ESOPs in primary care, and if I could even go outside the box further and incorporate patients into it.
So, Nicole, just so I'm clear on this, you mean ESOPs in primary care where the organization, the medical organization is employee-owned, or where, you know, it's more like your local co-op grocery store where patients or sort of participants, customers are also part of that ownership stake? Is that what you mean?
Well, you know, I like both ideas. So I wonder about, I like the patient participation aspect of it, and curious about that.
Nicole, thanks for your call. Yeah. Don Jameson, what do you think?
I'm scratching my head. I don't actually know of any ESOP companies in healthcare. I know there are some, but I don't know myself. But there are some interesting models in healthcare. I just actually heard about a really interesting one in Pennsylvania where they're trying to set up, it's essentially a CSA, you know, like a CSA farm, except for medicine. So you would pay a monthly fee, and you get a certain amount of time with the doctor per month, averaged out. So you're paying ahead so that they have the cash flow. So this is not exactly employee ownership, although the doctors own the company. But it's, you know, that it's that kind of hybrid sort of consumer engaged kind of model. So it's a form of cooperative, I would say.
Well, I mean, it's, you were saying earlier, Don, that you see more interest in this and more creative thinking around how do we form organizations that act more like this or are more like this, and what's the right structure. So it seems like that idea that Nicole had, you know, maybe something that comes in down the road if really we're seeing an upsurge in this idea.
Yeah, you know, in the Affordable Care Act, there was a designation of kind of consumer-directed healthcare organizations. They were called co-op in capital letters, co-op, which was an acronym for something or other, because they weren't really co-ops. So they were not, you know, there wasn't membership and member-elected boards of directors. It was kind of phony, and I don't think there have been many successes, although several states did try to set those up, including Vermont. It didn't fly. But anyway, Lord knows, there's a need for new models in healthcare.
Doug emailed in to say, I co-own a small business with 15 to 20 employees, and my business partner and I will retire in the next 10 years or so. Selling the company to a third party is one option. Selling to employees is another. Could you explain the mechanism that's actually used to sell the company to employees?
Okay, so 15 to 20 people, let's assume that it's too small for an ESOP. It's kind of on the border. You know, in some circumstances, an ESOP might work. If it's a sale to a cooperative, you're going to need to, you know, get the employees interested in this, because they're buying the company, actually. So they need to be educated. What is a cooperative? How does the company work? They're going to need to actually see the financial information. They should do a business plan. They really need to spearhead this. If the present owners intend to remain with the company for a number of years more, that's great, because there can be a nice organic slow transition of responsibilities, and hopefully they've already been working on that to some extent. So there's a real need to get the founding owner out of the driver's seat, and that's a good idea no matter what direction they're going to take. Even if they sell to an outsider, you know, it's a good idea for them, for the company to kind of be running itself, other employees to be stepping up into management responsibilities. So that's a really essential part of it. And then setting up that steering committee, and then creating bylaws and all that stuff, finding financing. There are some financing sources for worker co-op conversions. So the Cooperative Fund of New England actually targets this kind of investment. And there are, VITA actually participated in a recent one at the New School of Montpelier.
Well, and it sounds like if Doug is interested in chatting to people about this, there are two mixers, right? There's two events, one at Harpoon tonight and one at Switchback Brewing in Burlington tomorrow evening. And we can put details on our website for people who are interested in that. But while we have you, Don, I mean, this is obviously something that you care about, something that is important to you. So what is your pitch for why employee ownership is a good thing?
This is the moment I've been waiting for.
That's right.
Employee ownership is good for the seller of the company because they find a market for their business, and it's going to continue, and their legacy is going to be continued. It's good for employees because they're going to get at least an equity stake in the company. And in the case of co-ops and participatory ESOPs, they're going to get much more of a voice in their place of work, which makes work more meaningful. It's good for the community because the company stays locally owned. Wealth is distributed more broadly. What else can we say? There's also the prospect of improved productivity in the company if the ownership is really paired with meaningful participation for people. So it's great. That's win, 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 I think.
Yes, and so far we have heard minimal hurdles, although I know they're there in any business that goes through any kind of transition.
Yeah, that could be the next show, I suppose.
Oh, you're already pitching yourself again. Yeah. Good. All right, we'll have to have you back. Don Jamieson is Executive Director of the Vermont Employee Ownership Center. Don, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane.